Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Reloading with Brittany Scovel. I am your host, Brittany Mother Effin' Flippin' Scovel, and we've got an episode today with my mom again. We're going to talk about...
Hold on, what's the name of your podcast?
Reloading with Brittany Scovel.
Okay, I didn't know if you said reloading, because I think that's coming into different meanings coming up.
Yeah, kind of a controversial, I think.
Reloading can be a couple different things, one being animals.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Or however you choose to relax yourself.
Not me. We're talking about animals today.
Oh, are we?
Yes.
Oh, that's what we're talking. Okay, yeah, we could talk about that too.
That's a lead-in for future.
So where do you want to start? Do you want to start anything from the first trip or just talk about how different?
No, I think kind of in general. So you've done several trips. You've done Texas. You've done fishing. You've done Oklahoma. One thing...
We're talking about shipping, how to get animals back to... us when we travel.
Yes, to your taxidermist if you're going to keep them. So let's tie in some of your trips and your vacations and some things that you've done and some of the questions I've asked you prior to going. Is it catch and release? What is their preparation? Are they going to help you or do you need to know how to do this? Do I need to give you a little crash course? So we've kind of talked about that. So talk about some of your catch and release. What are some things that and why would you catch or release or just take photos of the animals versus harvesting and putting them in your game room?
Are you talking about fish though or fish, animals?
Yeah. Fish, because I mean you don't have any mounted fish, so how come you haven't?
My spoonbill, it wasn't just catch and release. We kept the meat because the meat was eatable. And yeah, and then for a catfish, when we went on the kayak catfishing trip, we could have like kept the meat, but I don't think there was any reason to, because they were already there for the previous 2 weeks, so we already had fish to eat and stuff. Mm-hmm.
So before you went on the spoonbill, did you know you wanted to bring back the bill as a souvenir, as a memory, as a...
Mm-mm. No, that was something that was mentioned once I got there. I didn't even know that was an option. And what did they call that? What do they call... Because...
The paddle.
No, I didn't send it to a taxidermist.
Oh,
I sent
it... was a museum.
Yeah, okay. So it was a museum that had done it because I guess, I don't know, bugs eat it away and that's... Is that it?
I don't know if they use bugs. So the
masturbation bill, process?
Masturbation?
Maceration, my word.
Maceration.
I always say that. I give her shit for it.
You say it too quickly and yes. The C and the B can kind of blur together. But if that was something that you knew you were going and you caught something, those are good questions to ask before you go on some of these trips. So your outfitters or the group that you're with had planned ahead. They had options for you. They had the coolers, they had the ice, they had the means to get the items frozen so we could, you could get them on to the next step, which is incredibly important in your planning when you do some of these trips.
Oh, absolutely. Because then you get coolers involved and then space is really limited if you're traveling with other people too. And then you got their gear. Right. So planning around loading up all our gear with the coolers was...
Coolers with meat and items and fish. And you ran into trouble with a couple of your Texas hunts.
Yeah. So, I still don't have...
Well, and me as a taxidermist, I'm seeing you. You were there with several people. And each day you were harvesting one or two items. And each day all the animals were coming back out for the photo shoot. And I'm going, whoa.
Where
are you
doing
keeping
this?
These? They're not skinned. They're full. They're intact. So big red flag. So for me as a taxidermist, water and heat is going to create bacteria, which is going to decompose your animal, the meat, anything, the skin, to make it not workable. So,
And for the Texas trip, we had a lot of people and a lot of things were getting harvested in the short amount of time that we were there. They had many like walk-in deep freezes. And so I think just to make time flow quicker and, you know, accomplish what we were there to accomplish, the animals that we had harvested were put into the deep freeze and kind of positioned as if we were going to take a picture. And then like the next day, if we didn't have time to take photos, because that wasn't the first thing that we did was take photos. We were trying to get the animals harvested for each person. And when we got to it, when we had the time, we'd come back to the deep freeze and they were like positioned frozen how they would be for a photo. And that was not something that I was used to. Like how you said, I was kind of like, what?
Like, whoa.
But then they finally got to it and then it was like, okay.
And there's like the catch and release or just taking photos or, I mean, it's important. You don't want to, you're not killing just for the sake of killing or harvesting or fishing. So the meat is being used. It's you're either consuming it yourself or it's going elsewhere. And then you continue to honor that animal or fish by using every bit of it.
Yeah.
The hide, the horns, the paddle. Like the Cape Buffalo happens to be his balls that we harvested and we're putting
they use, to use everything. Stomach lining, they make stew, soup, everything does not go wasted.
So when you go to Africa and you're harvesting these animals, one, the meat is being consumed by you, the hunter. The people that are working on the camp and the ranch and everything are eating it. And what they obviously cannot eat all of this meat, they are donating it. So everything of those animals are being used. So that was very interesting.
When I say that on social media, people don't believe me. They're like, oh, you donate to villages of South Africa? Yeah. We actually do. It's pictures. Not just villages. It's churches. It's the communities. It's the people of South Africa.
And then, I mean, these are once-in-a-lifetime animals. You're not killing just to kill. You're harvesting. It's part of the cycle of life there. It's keeping the animal population in a manageable control.
Jobs. How many jobs it creates.
And it's the mount that you're putting on the wall. Yeah, the jobs are important. The mount that you're putting on the wall is. I don't like the word trophy. It's your memory.
I hate trophy.
It's to me.
I want to say collector's item, but it's not even a collector's item. It's just a memory that you're always going to have and see, and it's just right there.
I kind of refer to it as when I'm recreating your memory.
Yeah.
I am recreating that memory, and it could be, and somebody will look at it, it's like, oh, that's just a little spike, but why are they doing that? Because that's a memory that they want to remember in time, whether the people they were with or the location they were at or the farm. There's something about that that creates a whole picture for them.
Mm-hmm.
So when you go over there, I was super curious. So the first time you went over there, everything got back, and it was kind of post-COVID, during COVID. Everything got back probably skin-wise about a year and a half. But I
was in crates.
In crates, but and that's all I saw as a taxidermist was the end result. So I was super curious of the process in between there. And thank goodness you were with people that took care of that process for you. So it went very seamlessly, and there wasn't any questions. But then I'm thinking now, my second time there and the questions I had, if you're not the right person, how are you getting these back? These are questions any trip you go on to, so you're not being wasteful. Obviously, we can't bring the meat over. There's big relations over that. That's why we're eating it while we're there. But to bring over the skins and stuff. We just got, and that's where this topic kind of came up. We just got our animals back from our trip a year ago. So a little quicker turnaround time. So far, I haven't inspected, I haven't tanned, I haven't anything, but we're just kind of talking about the process, and there's a lot of steps between the time that we were there a year ago harvesting these animals to then getting them into the United States. There's lots of loops and regulations and documentation that has to be followed through. So it starts with the outfitter. Starts with the outfitter, your PA. Again, the sooner you get that harvested animal into a controlled environment, eliminating water and heat, the less risk you have of bad meat, bad hides, bad skin, etc. So we would immediately, after every hunt, and if it was going to be several hours, if you're going out again, we would come back into the skinning shed and drop off the animals, and they were immediately taken care of. There's a picture that we can put up here of the skinning shed, and I think it's my Cape Buffalo that filled up that whole skinning shed.
That would have to be one of your favorite parts, right? Yeah. Spending time with the other taxidermists. From Zimbabwe, definitely. Right?
Yep. So everything's tagged. So just like here, everything's tagged, marked by the hunter, by the outfitter. There's a process. There's a legal process. So everything is documented, and that all happened in the skinning shed. And then from there, I came back another day and was able to see the meat that was then taken off the carcasses. And there's a picture of the gal that was in there cutting up and preparing the meat to be distributed to all the different avenues that they were dispersing the meat to, whether it was back to our camp, into the, I'm going to call it food banks, but back into the villages to be dispersed within there. So that's all done immediately, right then and there. They do not have the freezer space like we do. They had the refrigerators, and they had a little bit of a freezer space, but they needed to get that meat. So it came off the carcass, cut up, bagged in correct portions, because you can't put bones and wasted things you're not using into the freezer. So that was immediately done. Our hides were immediately removed, fleshed, and salted. And there's pictures of that process also. So the salting is going to draw out the moisture of the hide. It's not changing the chemistry of the hide to leather, but it's drawing out the moisture, which is eliminating that big risk of bacteria setting in. So we have several pictures of hides hanging there in the sun after they salted them. So they'll salt them, dry them, resalt them, dry them. It's a several day process. And then the skulls and the other items that are being tagged. So the skulls, the meat, and the excess stuff was also removed. They were salted and they were dried at the outfitting place. And that was all, we didn't pay extra for that. I mean, it's part of harvesting the animal, but that was all part of that price. So we're there, you pay for your trip, your flight, the animals, and then the money starts rolling out more. It's kind of a constant thing. So that's something that people need to be prepared for, is the ongoing cost and the next steps that come up.
Basically, if you want your animals back in the States, you pay any amount of money to get them back. And there's several steps to get them back. And you don't even know if it's the right cape or horns that you're getting back. It could be someone completely different.
I have to believe that they've done everything possible to make sure that our animal is coming back to us. You just have to believe that.
Yeah.
I mean,
there's always that possibility. You're going overseas on a trip, that's a possibility of what could happen to your once-in-a-lifetime trophy. You could be bringing home a totally different one.
Or none at all, because something happened along the way.
Yeah.
And it wasn't properly taken care of.
And it's not just a one-time payment. Like, a couple months go by, there's another payment. A couple weeks go by, there's another payment. It was like, oh, shit, here we go. Splitting another bill.
Big payments. So that's the first step of bringing your animals back, is using an outfitter that has the resources there, that can skin it, take care of, and stopping that bacteria process right then and there. So from there, it goes to what they call a dip and pack. And what we use, it was the same company in Africa.
Was there different dip and pack packages, or was there just one?
You could choose how you wanted your animal process. So the dip and pack that we use was the same one that you used on your first trip. And they are also a taxidermy. So they're a dip and taxidermy business. So the dip and pack is basically, they're a veterinarian approved facility that can sterilize these animals for shipping. So if you didn't want them to do any sort of taxidermy work whatsoever, they have to go to a dip and pack to go through the legal processes to bring animals back into the United States. Then you have the different packages. So yes, each animal you could have, we have basically the option of, did you want to keep the skull and the horns? Did you want the cape for mounting, for shoulder mount processes? Did you want the back half of the hide? So again, nothing's going wasted.
And we all kept all of our back.
Yep.
Back skins from all of our animals from the first year.
And or do you want it rugged? And that would be a soft pliable tan, not a taxidermy tan. So two different processes. So we had some of our items are being shoulder mounted. So we asked them to be caped. So they are salted dried as a cape to be shoulder mounted. And then we'll continue that taxidermy process here of tanning that hide to be for a taxidermy tan, so it can be mounted to take on the form of a mannequin. And then you had the option of rugging them, so it'd be a completed item before it came over. And you did that with Austin Zebra the previous time. We did that with all of our back halves, because we learned from the previous time that it was so much easier and actually in this situation a higher quality to have them rug them there and to send back a finished product of the back ends.
And we did a rug of Austin Zebra the first year. We just used tacks all over to put it up. Some people put like carpet, line it with carpet or fabric and hang it up that way, or they just keep it on the ground. Yeah. But I don't want the dogs pissing on it, so.
Yeah, and it was beautiful. And I've not found a tannery that can duplicate what we got back for that zebra for the cost here. So way easier to have that done in Africa and have it shipped back as a finished product. When you get your skulls back and the horns, keep in mind, the skulls, when they're processing them there in Africa, are boiled. And it works. The meat's off of it. You shouldn't have any bugs because there's not any meat for them to eat. But they are full of grease. Terribly full of grease. Bone marrow, basically, is what's still in there. And as it goes, the skull goes through different temperatures that will start to liquefy and leach out, and they were so greasy, some of them, you could feel. They had a greasy feel to them. So I highly recommend, once you get your skulls back, if you're going to leave it as a skull mount, to then take it to your taxidermist and have them finish processing it, degrease it, whiten it, so then it's a fully sanitized item to be able to put in your house and not have to worry about that grease turning it yellow and that feel on it, which was really gross. So, and that would be all you have to do with the skull. So Austin's warthog that came back, it is going through the rest of the process of cleaning it for a skull mount that he can put on the mantle or whatever he decides to do with that. The other skulls came, we've got them also, but they're going to be shoulder mounts. Some of the horns were already sweated and removed off, and some of them were not. So the bosses of the wildebeest and the Cape Buffalo, I will then, as a taxidermist, need to get them off because the cores have living tissue and matter underneath there. And, of course, it's mummified at this point. So there's not any risk of it, like, smelling, but there could. It could draw bugs eventually. So that's what we're doing with that. So we're still talking about the dip and pack taxidermist.
Mm-hmm.
How many animals are we bringing back? What did we harvest?
Six. Seven? I don't know. I actually don't remember.
It was six. So what did you harvest, Brittany, and what are we doing with your stuff?
I first harvested my Impala, which Austin shot his first year. I don't remember what we decided on, what we were doing with the Impala. I think just a shoulder mount.
Yep. And you have the tan back half, too.
Okay, yeah. What are we doing with the back, all the back skins?
I don't know. We need to decide that.
I think it'd be pretty cool if we mesh all of them together and get a little cool ombre effect with the different colors.
And definitely a size. We got the little, I think the smallest was the Impala, mm-hmm. up to the big butt cheeks of the the Cape Buffalo.
So if you have any ideas, let us know what we should do with the back skins. Yeah. We've got all of them, right?
Yep. Except for, well, the warthog was just the tail. Austin wanted the tail for a whip.
A whip. I hope he pulls through with that. Did I only harvest two animals? My sable? Because
sable
I
and the
didn't get Impala. My kudu. Damn.
You paid for three.
I did pay for three. That's another good thing to know. If you go and you wound an animal or you don't successfully shoot one. Well, I mean, if you clean miss an animal, you don't have to pay for it. But if you wound it, you don't find it, you still got to pay for it. Which makes sense, but it really sucks once you get a kudu. The price of a kudu is not great.
It was beautiful.
Yeah. I know beautiful. He's dead somewhere.
Yeah.
What do you think, honestly? And I know ever since Africa, I've said he's dead somewhere in the bush.
It looked like he had a good shot. So everything's being filmed and videotaped. He had to be. I think we just tracked it too soon.
I agree.
And pushed him.
Mm-hmm. There was way too much blood. I overlooked the vitals and shot placement over and over and over again. Replayed the video. There's no way. If we would have gone out 20, 40 minutes later, it probably would have been dead.
We're running out of daylight.
Mm-hmm. And then if we didn't get to them, then other animals would. So if we would have waited, then we kind of would have been screwed either way.
Wasn't it? So we were running out of daylight, but what else was the sight? Was it a mountain lion? There was an animal where we were.
Cape Buffalo.
Oh, the Cape Buffalo were in the area.
And we were by ourselves.
Yes.
When we were tracking, that's really dangerous. And if we saw one, we're supposed to climb trees.
So our tie, yes, that's right. It was a Cape Buffalo.
And we were left alone because he had to go get the buggy.
Yes, and we have no weapons on us at all.
I have my bow.
No, we didn't have that.
I believe.
No, they were on the buggy. Oh, you might have had your
bow. I
think
I had my bow.
Yep, you did. So, do you remember how much that cost? So, the dip and pack of the taxidermy that they did there for us, and then crating it, along with a veterinary fee and a admin fee. So six animals to do all that. Do you remember what it cost?
I want to say 300? No. 1,000?
No, you're off. 1,700.
Yep. For all three of us?
Yep.
Oh, just for the dipping packs?
Yes. That's just one step.
Okay, never mind.
So
I thought you were talking about.
So it was 1,700. And that was, and then we divided it because there was three of us. So that was something, it was per animal. So mine cost quite a bit more because of the Cape Buffalo. Brittany had two items. So we split that among the three people and what they harvested. So we had that cost post-hunt. Then they go into a quarantine. And I guess I can't quite figure out if there's
quarantine.
A quarantine. They have to
sit. For the animals.
Yeah, and I don't know if that happens at the taxidermy place. I think it does. That's part of the veterinary fee of making sure that they've been sanitized and we're not bringing any bugs and stuff back to the next facility, mm-hmm. moving it to the next facility. They also crate them there. So once it's crated and gone through the quarantine and all the regulations and documentation for these animals have been there, then we got an email from a logistic coordinator. And that was the shipping, the getting international shipping from South Africa to Chicago. And
Wait, they get flown?
No, they would have been on a ship.
That's, so then how did it get from Africa? Did it go to the Gulf or a port and then
flown? I don't know the actual path it took.
Because if it was shipped, it would have been...
I think they're on cargo ships.
I think you're right, but okay. To Chicago, sorry. Thought you messed a step.
So we then had to... So to get them off of the port in Chicago, they have to go... I couldn't pick them up as a taxidermist. You couldn't pick them up as the hunter. They had to go to a USDA certified facility. If there wasn't a warthog in there, swine and monkey, then yes, I could have picked him up as a taxidermist.
So if the warthog wasn't there?
Yeah. Then everything would have been done and there wasn't any other things that we had to do with the U.S. of introducing other animals.
And if you thought it stopped at Chicago, boy, you were wrong. Then it transfers into Matuska taxidermy.
Because I'm not USDA certified. So... Yes, so then we had to say where it was going. So there was multiple calls of finding who where to send it to. We chose Matuska because I use them quite a bit.
For forms and orders. Not close enough, though.
Yeah, about 6 hours. Send it directly to a tannery, too. Several tanneries are USDA certified, but not all of our items needed to be tanned. So that didn't quite make sense to me either to do. So that... The logistic coordinator, the quarantine in Chicago, the shipping from South Africa to Chicago, then on to Matuska, was another $1,700.
My good friend Chris actually lives in the area of Matuska taxidermy, so we called her up and she actually picked us up our mounts and brought them back home, and that was it.
She saved us big time.
Yeah, well, they forgot a whole package, though, so she had to go back. So I was like, okay, I'm going to give her some gas money. And then Matuska ended up giving her, like, $100 because they felt bad. So
they did? I didn't know that.
They did.
They're such a good company.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I can't say enough good things about Matuska taxidermy. Oh, I didn't know that. That was pretty sweet.
I thought I told you that.
No. Huh. Very good.
If you ever consider an out-of-state trip... Just know that there's a lot of other fees and
additional cost to budget for.
Especially if it's like a giveaway. Like if you're at a SHOT Show and you enter all these like African safari giveaways and they say it's completely free. No, it's not. There's so many things that go into factoring the total cost of a trip. Yeah. Then again, it is so much cheaper to go to South Africa than to go on a game farm in Texas for exotics. So
definitely. Pick our your trip was pretty inexpensive.
It was. You can make it as expensive as you want. And we said, fuck it. You only live once.
Yeah.
That's how you got to live life.
Yeah. So the Cape Buffalo is Brittany's inheritance. We spent a little bit of our savings in retirement. But if we didn't spend it another way, I guess it'll go eventually on her wall.
I cannot wait to get that thing up on my wall. But so, I hope it's a while.
A while. Oh, well, yes, before it's on your wall.
Yeah.
So that's a post-hunt cost. That's just getting it back to us and the taxidermist. And then you're going to have your taxidermy fees again here, depending on what you want to do. So, yeah.
Is taxidermy expensive?
Yeah. Do you not know that? Seems how?
I don't think so.
You
kind of
have an in?
Some lady, like... Honestly, she comes to my house and delivers free mounts all the time. I thought it was just like, you know, factory meals.
Yeah, no.
No? I'm just kidding. We try to pay it off.
Yeah, I try to get at least my cost out of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
or projects. I remember the first year you'd given Austin like random ass projects to do. And he's like, I'm just happy to be here. Like, we were pretty fresh into the relationship, too.
Yeah, he built me a finishing tower.
He did, yeah.
Yeah, I use that. That's pretty awesome, but yes. So then you have your taxidermy fees, but at least by then you know that they're here, they're safe. Make some decisions what you're going to do with the next. Budget those out. I would strongly suggest your taxidermist use a tannery. We self-tan all of our deer hides. We will do the smaller items.
We're not normal girls. We're yee-yee girls.
But they're complicated, those skins, and that was another reason why I wanted to go back. One of those skins, one of the big, thick, big-ass animal, I think it was your water box. You barely touch it. No, it was that guy. That guy right there, one of the biggest ones we've got mounted from you, but you barely touch the skin and your finger's breaking through like tissue, like toilet paper. Pain in the ass. So anyways, okay. Right ahead. There's a lot more to the trip. Definitely would do it. I would go again. Worth it. But
if she went again, she'd definitely want the tour aspect of it. Next episode is going to be an episode I don't even know what it's going to be about. It's my mom's topic. So stay tuned for that. Thank you for tuning in. I appreciate the hospitality you've given off today.
I'll make her talk more.
Yeah, make me talk more.
This is your podcast, not mine.
Turning into dad over here. I'm like, Jesus, he finally rubbing off on you after like, what, how many years have you guys been married?
Might need to rename this podcast.
We should get both of you on an episode. He'd be...
There'd be fireworks.
Okay, we out.